Hi, this is Chip Zdarsky, and this is the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.
Greetings, Cap fans, and welcome to a very special episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. It is episode 182, and I am your host, Rick Verbanis. And as always, I am joined by, some would say, the best gosh darn co-host out there. His name? Well, it's Bob Lucius. Oh, Bob. Punch, you're going to be the death of me.
Rick, yeah? In the way back time machine.
Yeah, well, how far back we going there, Bob?
Man, was that mid-70s, Rick?
Late 70s,
was
yeah.
It late 70s, mid-late, early 70s? Yeah, okay, yeah, Chip,
you just,
right?
Wait a minute, yes, but you just went mid, early, late 70s. You just qualified yourself for like a whole decade there.
Of course.
Good
of
for
course.
You.
Yes,
good for you.
Yes.
Wait a
minute. Oh, I love that show, Rick, as a young...
Chips.
Young boy, Chips, yeah.
Yeah, Poncherello.
Yeah, and what was it? John? Was
John
his
was his
John?
Partner.
And,
yeah.
I can't remember the detective's name, like the guy who was in charge. The sergeant,
yeah, I don't remember
right?
his name either. But we probably, I mean, we'd see his face and be like, oh,
you know
that
him
guy.
Right away. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
Do you know,
show.
You remember what Chips stand for?
California Highway Patrol, Rick.
Yeah, well, what's the I? What's the I, Bob?
There's no I.
There's no yeah. I in team. What is that?
No, there was no I. CHP.
Yes, CHP. Chips.
Yeah. I used to think every time, you know, because I lived in California for many, many years, you know, stationed there at different places.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I saw a California Highway Patrol, I'd always like try to. Nope, not Punch.
Okay.
Punch. Yeah.
Eric Estrada.
Yeah.
He was like a heartthrob for a while, right?
He was. I don't recall. Was he ever in anything ever again?
I don't know.
I know they did some spin-offs of Chips, like Chips 99. They had
oh,
like
yeah?
a bunch. They had like a handful. I think he might have made some guest appearances in those, but I think that was it for him.
You know, I like a handful of Chips.
Who doesn't really, you know?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been awesome if he did like a crossover with TJ Hooker. That would have been awesome.
I like a handful of hookers. Speaking a handful of Chips, I gotta say, oh, by the way, why am I greeting you that way today, Bob?
And we got a special guest today, Rick.
We do.
Yeah.
John Poncherello.
Yes. So looking forward to asking him where he's been.
Eric Estrada. No, you're right. Chip Zdarsky is joining the show today. He is a writer. He is an illustrator. He is so many things. We're very excited to have him on the show today to talk about his career overall, but also about, you know, obviously his Captain America tie-ins with the current Marvel hit miniseries, Avengers Twilight. We may also ask him some questions about his Invaders miniseries that he did about 4 years ago, which starred Captain America, as well as some other things too. So, yeah, I can't wait to have Chip on the show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this because that series so far has been fire.
Mm-hmm.
I've been dying to use that phrase. I got that from my son. That show is.
Wait a minute. Are you sure he wasn't saying it's lit? Those are two different things,
Bob. Those are two things. Actually, I met this young. I was out at work on, I don't know, Saturday morning, out at one of the trails. I was doing a little tabling, you know, talking to, you know, people, visitors, and this young woman. I don't know. She was in her 20s or so, and she was out there doing a hike with a friend, and I was chatting her up, talking, and she kept saying,
"Wait! There's a lady who's in her 20s,
yeah,
out on the trail, and you're chatting her up.
Yeah, that's my job, you know.
Yeah,
welcome all comers. So, but anyway, she kept saying that's sick. Like she must have said it like 15 times in the conversation.
Uh-huh.
Wow, that's sick. So I want to say, yeah, that Avengers Twilight, man, that's sick."
Okay, way to connect
with the kiddos.
younger listeners, right?
Hey, fellow young listeners.
Wait, what? Gosh, what was that name? Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi, right.
Steve Buscemi, he walks into a high school and he's got like a skateboard. He's like, hello, hey. What was that from?
Hello, fellow kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where was that from?
I don't remember. It's famous. Oh. I see that all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah. Anyway, that's us, by the way.
That's us.
We walk into any high school, it is, somebody's dad is here.
Yeah.
Maybe in your case, somebody's grandpa.
Exactly.
You know, I could get away with somebody's older brother, right?
Yeah, especially with your underoos.
It is Tuesday.
Right?
Yeah, it is Tuesday.
I know you're wearing the underoos. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a little eyeball on the... in the work gym, this men's locker room today. It was, I got one of these.
Oh yeah. The side eye. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Anyway. How you doing, Bob?
Good. You know, busy as always, but life is good. You know, summer's right. coming, right? I saw, they're getting flowers up north. I hear.
Oh yeah. Well, that's old news. Yeah, we got our daffodils popped up. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, because it's now beginning of April, right?
Yeah.
We are dead into our Cap Madness on our Captain America Facebook group page, in our community. So, if for those of you who don't go to Facebook, you really should check out our Facebook group. It is Cap Comic Book Fans, and we have over 5,000 Cap fans on there. And every year around this time, we do, to tie in with March Madness, we do Cap Madness. And this is, I guess, year four, Bob. And we are into who is your favorite Captain America artist of all time. So we start with 32 and then we go down to 16 and then we're going to whittle our way down, all the way to who's the favorite. And it's all based on your votes. So we're having fun with that.
Oh my goodness. I think it's going to have to be Daniel Acuña now.
Acuña. Right?
Sorry. Yeah. Daniel Acuña.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be. We are going to be talking about, Avengers Twilight today. He is a phenomenal artist. I loved his work on Punisher back in the day. Speaking of artists back in the day, Bob, you know who's celebrating a birthday?
Who?
Alex Schomburg. April 10th is Alex Schomburg's birthday.
Wow. I can't believe I didn't know that off the top of my head, Rick.
I know. Listen, Golden Age artist, cover extraordinaire, right? I mean, like, his covers are famous from back during the World War II. In fact, do you have any in your personal collection, Bob?
I certainly do. I've got a handful of them. He was such a prolific cover artist back in the day. And of course, what was it? Giant-Sized Invaders, right? Didn't he do the cover for that as well?
I think so.
Yeah. I think the only Marvel cover he did after the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of Invaders and speaking of Schomburg covers, where we often see Bucky in some sort of perilous situation, we definitely have to talk to our guest today about those, because he did write a 12-issue Invaders miniseries back 2019, 2020.
Mm-hmm. Sure did. And that was a great, great series. So I can't wait to talk to him about it.
Oh, one other thing too, Bob, because I see that you are wearing, you might want to sit back a little bit, your What Would Cap Do t-shirt. It's looking very, it looks really good on you, Bob.
It feels good. It feels good. I feel powerful with it.
Do you?
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I'm told it brings out my eyes.
Really?
Yeah.
It brings
out
my thighs,
the red part, the bloodshot.
Yeah. I may have to start wearing it. I have a big presentation to deliver tomorrow. I may be wearing this underneath my formal attire.
Know that you're going to have your What Would Cap Do challenge coin in your pocket, in your little dangly coin purse thing.
Yes. My tester purse. Yes. Absolutely, I have that on me. And if you don't know what that is, folks, I advise you go to the Captain America comic book fans group on Facebook and just do a little photo search.
For your test to purse. It's too much. Also, just reminding people who might want to win a t-shirt like this, we are giving away this What Would Cap Do t-shirt. And all you have to do is there's a few different ways to win. You can go on to Apple Podcasts and you can give us a 5-star review and write us a review, and we'll read it here on the air. You can go on YouTube and make sure that you subscribe, give us a review on there as well. Or you can on Facebook just take one of our posts that we do when we have a new episode, and you could share it to another comic group and make sure you let us know. So anyway, any of those three ways work. You're entered into the contest, and just you can always ping me on Facebook Messenger or tag me on Facebook and let me know. And also let me know what your t-shirt size is, because we'll need to know that.
Well, that's going to be one lucky winner out there, Rick. That is going to be part of a very elite club.
So, very elite. There'll be three of us.
You want to pass up this opportunity. Yes.
There'll be three of us wearing this t-shirt. And maybe someday more. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think we've chatted enough, Bob. Is it time to get Chip out of the green room?
It is. Let's bring him in.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So our guest today, Chip Zdarsky, is a comic book artist and writer, journalist, illustrator, and designer. Chip is the creator of Public Domain, New Bern, Prison Funnies, and Munster Cops, and is artist and co-creator of Sex Criminals with writer Matt Fraction, celebrating its 10-year anniversary. You've seen his work on Howard the Duck, Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, Daredevil, Devil's Reign for Marvel Comics, and he's been the writer for Batman for DC Comics in the last year and a half. Captain America fans know his work on Invaders Volume 3, which came out in 2019, and the current miniseries starring an aged Cap in Avengers Twilight. We are very excited to have Chip Zdarsky join us today. Chip, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of your work from Daredevil. Absolutely loved all your runs on that, including Devil's Reign and everything involved. And I want to set something straight. I've heard you talk about this before you attend shows and you have lines of people that come to you, and you know the ones that are like looking at some of your independent work, your self-created work, and then some of the that are, reading Daredevil, reading Batman, and so on.
Yeah.
You had mentioned that, I know they're going to be reading Daredevil. They're not reading it for me. And I got to tell you, that's not always the case. When I saw your name associated with Avengers Twilight, I was going to read it, but I knew I really wanted to read it. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, obviously I was being a bit extreme with that statement. Like, there are Daredevil readers who read it because of me or picked it up because it was Daredevil and then stayed because it was me and would follow me to other projects. But there are definitely fans who are just like, I am a fan of that character and I will read anything that character, and but that's it. Like, but they'll also read it even if they hate it, which is also a weird thing.
Well, I think. Hey, put me down as a weird thing, right? So
You're Captain America themed. Like, I totally get it. Like, you've got a lifestyle based around this character.
I don't know about lifestyle, but I definitely have.
Let's
my
see.
Hobby.
Wait. Let me count the number of comics behind you. There's a poster. There's two posters. Your sweatshirt is a Captain America sweatshirt.
Yep.
You're drinking from your cap mug.
That's what you can see.
That's what I can see. Yeah.
If I was wearing pants, they would be Captain America too.
Yeah.
But
sure.
I'm not. So yeah.
Well, you know, it's Tuesday, Bob. So I'm wearing my cap underwear.
Yeah, you got to cover. Right. You got to cover your little Stevie Rogers. You know?
Exactly. So take for example, I picked up Captain America in 1983, and I have been collecting it every month since then, and Daredevil as well.
Yeah.
I have sat through so many bad story arcs, bad creators, but to your point, a love for the character has kept me through. The difference is, to me, Chip, is that I look back on 30, 40 years of a title, and I go, I love that J. DeMatteis run. I love that Mark Waid run. I love that so-and-so run. And people are going to be saying, I love that Zdarsky run.
I mean, that's always the hope. It seems to have gone well. It was definitely the kind of title where it was you kind of know on Daredevil, like, that's a title where you're either forgotten or you're in with the greats a little bit. Like, there's not a lot of kind of mushy middle on that title. You're remembered or you're forgotten. David Harper of sketch.com just posted a thing today talking about how Daredevil's the best title that Marvel publishes because of that fact, because of, like, the creators can really kind of stretch their wings and do whatever they want on that title. Because, you know, Captain America is another one, but Cap is an Avenger, so he's tied into other stuff. Daredevil's never tied into anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I mentioned in that same article where I was like, you know, I had Daredevil not in costume for 10 issues, and you could not do that with Spider-Man. Like, if Spider-Man's not in his costume by the end of an issue, like, you have failed. Right. And you're going to hear about it. Cap, you can obviously get away with it to an extent, but because he pops up in so many other places and he's, like, kind of the heart of the Marvel Universe, like, you can't, besides Grunwald, you know, semi-retiring him and putting him in the Captain persona for a while, like, he was still able to pop up in other books, and, like, it was an intriguing way to get people back to the Captain America series. But it's Daredevil's a different one because of that fact, I think.
Well, I read you got your love of comics by reading Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars number 7.
Yep.
What was it about that issue that grabbed you?
Oh, man. Like, you know, people slag on that series a fair amount, and they did it back in the day as well. Like, people at Marvel slagged on it. Jim Shooter understood that kids were going to look at that book and it was going to be like their toys come to life. Like, he played with those characters the way kids would play with their toys. And, you know, obviously there was a whole toy line tied into Secret Wars. So that really helped. But yeah, just picking up a book and seeing just, like, these massive stakes and characters dying, characters, like, hooking up, and every bad guy, every good guy, like, it was massive. It just felt like monumental when I was that age. I had just enough of an understanding of comics. Like, I think I had a couple, like, Supermans and some Spider-Mans. I was really into the Spider-Man animated show when I was, like, 5 or 6. I very distinctly remember being in a Canadian version of 7-Eleven, a Max Milk, and mom being like, oh, here's a buck. Like, get a comic just to shut you up in the back seat. And I saw that cover. I saw Captain America, like, as the main image on that cover, just, like, you know, in agony. It was a Bob Layton cover, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And all these superheroes and, like, this mention of tragedy. I'm like, well, I got to find out.
Right.
And yeah, and that just sent me down the path, like, fully.
Were you familiar with all or most of the characters before reading that? Or was this, like, your first introduction to some of them?
Hard to recall, because, you know, rereading it now, it feels like I've known those characters forever. But, like, it had to be my first for a ton of them. like I knew who the Hulk was, obviously, because as a kid I watched the show and I knew Spider-Man and even Cap. Like one of my favorite childhood memories was mom going off to bingo and leaving me and dad at home alone. And he was like, oh, there's this TV movie on tonight, some Captain America thing. Like, let's watch that. And that's like a super fond memory. So I had like enough knowledge of the characters through kind of other media as an entry point, but I didn't know much about the X-Men or a lot of the other Avengers. I didn't know who Iron Man was probably. Mm-hmm. But like that was the thing about those comics at the time. Like they were very simplistic in a lot of ways, but they also were very easy to introduce new readers, especially kids. Like, you know, they're a little eye rolling and like, you know, the classic Wolverine thing, like my adamantium claws can cut through anything, so I'll cut through this. Like, you know, stating their abilities right as they're doing it in very awkward ways. But for the target audience, especially at the time, which was me at age of 8 or whatever, it was perfect.
So how did you go from being this kid who loved comics to a professional creator?
Accident. Weirdly. I mean, I love comics and I would make my own as a kid. But by the time I graduated high school, I ended up in an illustration program. And they really kind of check comics at the door. That was the kind of vibe of the school. Like we don't want to see fantasy, we don't want to see comics. Like, you're here to be an illustrator, which means like package design, editorial illustration, storybooks, mm-hmm. things like that. They really look down on comics. But like while there, you kind of meet your buddies who are still into comics and kind of like doing their own drawings. I wasn't reading them at that point. Like essentially once I moved to college, I didn't have the money. I was buying, you know, discount ground beef every night to feed myself. So I wasn't spending money on comics. I went through school as an illustrator and ended up mostly working at newspapers. So I worked at a newspaper for about 12 years. Kind of started off as a graphic designer, information graphics, and kind of started to pitch them stuff. So I would do my own little comics in the paper and kind of like comic book journalism, where I'd go and I'd do an event and then and to do comics about it. I had an advice column. It was a very weird job. Like it was kind of one of those jobs where eventually I was kind of like a mascot for the paper and I could just do what I want.
And that's, I guess that's where you met your wife, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Met my wife there, who knew nothing about comics, still doesn't, which is amazing to me. The other day I asked her for some ideas for Batman and she said, I don't know anything about Batman. I'm like, everyone knows something about Batman. And she said, all I know is there's a guy named Alfred and there's Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm like, what? Like, one of those is wrong. Like, you had two things that you thought you knew about Batman and one is wrong. Those are really formative years for me at the newspaper because it also taught me about deadlines. Like, newspaper deadlines are every day and they don't put blank pages in a newspaper when they send it to press. Like, something's got to be on that page. It taught me to write succinctly, which also came in handy for comics. Like, the editors at the newspaper really taught me that my words are not precious jewels and that my 1,000-word joke needed to be like 50. You know, it was some hard lessons to learn. But the whole time I was doing that, I was kind of doing my own comics, just like a little black and white thing. I put like one a year maybe. And I would do conventions with like one of my buddies from my art school, who Kagan McLeod, who did Infinite Kung Fu. And we later did Kaptar at Image Comics together. And that was just fun. Like, it was just kind of fun kind of getting back into comics. I hadn't read them really for a long time. And when I did, it tended, like, I kind of did I did that thing where I graduated from Marvel, DC into Vertigo when I was a teenager, once I became a goth. And then you kind of move past Vertigo and you get into Fantagraphics and Drawn Quarterly and all the highbrow stuff. And then you kind of go back around. And next thing you know, I'm looking at like old Scrooge McDuck comics and Archie comics again, because you kind of realize how well done a lot of those are. Uh-huh. And then kind of loop back into Marvel DC. So in the 2000s, I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, we talked a bit about JMS before this and like JMS's Spider-Man run, like that got me back into Spidey for mm-hmm. sure. After I kind of ditched out during the Clone Saga in the 90s. And so I was kind of following comics almost like it was fantasy football. I wasn't buying a lot of comics or reading a lot, but I knew everything that was happening in comics. I knew the creators. And I was fascinated by the Marvel and DC stuff, but I was still just doing my own thing. And then one day, I was buddies with Matt Fraction, a comic book writer who was at Marvel at the time. And, we were pals. We worked on a music video together. We just kind of shared all the same interests. So one day I was just like, I'm getting bored of the newspaper. I want to do something. And he was kind of leaving Marvel at the time. So we were just like, let's just make a comic together. And it ended up being the book called Sex Criminals for Image Comics, which was like this wild, weird explosion in like 2013.
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. Family friendly. You warned me, isn't family friendly. So I'm going to ask you to tone it down. It changed my life. Like, I was the artist on that book. And it exploded. I keep setting you up for these. And eventually, within a year, I'd had to quit the newspaper because it wasn't a part-time gig anymore. It was a full-time gig, and we were like traveling the world promoting it and stuff, and
winning awards and getting all kind of accolades.
It was a weird year, and it ramped up so quickly. Like within that first year, we were like number one New York Times. Time Magazine's Comic of the Year, like Eisner's, like it was, and I was working in the newspaper the whole time. So I'd just go into work at the newspaper and they'd be like, hey, we noticed this story, like, where you just won this award. I'm like, yeah, weird, eh? Anyways, let's do some graphics. Like, very strange. And that opened up the world to me in terms of comic book stuff. And there's an editor at Marvel who previously bought my black and white kind of self-printed stuff. And so he knew I could write. So he was like, hey, you know, do you want to do like a little 2-page thing in the back of this anthology? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And so I wrote, drew, colored, lettered, like kind of a gag strip form, you know, ahead of the deadline. And I think that's all it took. Once he saw that I could do all of it and that I was easy to work with and that I didn't screw him over on the deadline, he was like, all right. Let's get you on Howard the Duck or something bigger. Mm-hmm. And so that's what kind of started. And yeah, quit the newspaper after a year and just been doing comics ever since.
So you've been very successful in comics as both an artist and a writer. And in some cases, you like you said, you've done both. What are your likes and dislikes for any of those three scenarios, writer, artist, both? Do you have a preference?
It depends on the day. Writing is easier generally. Like, I can write a script anywhere between 3 days and a week. Whereas if I'm drawing a comic, you know, that's like a month and a half of my life. 8-hour days, just boom, boom, boom. So I like that part of writing. You don't get stuck drawing, though, I notice. Once you hit a certain point, it's like, okay, this page is going to take me 8 hours, and it will take you 8 hours. Because you know how to draw. Whereas with writing, sometimes you can just hit a wall and you'll be like, I don't know how to get Batman out of this. And you'll wander around the neighborhood for hours and have nothing. So there's writer's block more than there is artist block. The downside to being the writer, like, writers get too much credit, but they also get all the credit for bad. So, like, if you like an artist, you're going to like that artist every issue. There's not going to be an issue of a Stuart Immonen comic where I'm like, well, finally Stuart Immonen did a bad job. Like, it's just not going to happen. Right. Whereas with writers, people have very specific ideas about what characters should be doing. It's almost never about story quality. It's mostly just about the actions of characters and whether or not the reader agrees with the actions. So readers can turn on you quickly. Like, you can have an issue where readers loves an issue with Daredevil and the next issue they hate it because Daredevil like kissed the wrong girl. Like, so you become a lightning rod for the bad as a writer, but also for the good. So it's a lot more extreme being a writer than it is being an artist. An artist, you can just kind of keep your head down, do the work. And if someone likes your stuff, they like it. If they don't like your stuff, they're just not going to like it. Like, it's just very straightforward.
So when you are writing, let's say you're writing for yourself, you're doing public domain, which is your creation, and you both write and illustrate the series.
Yeah.
Versus writing for others, like DC or Marvel, do you have a different method? Is it a full script? Is it the Marvel way, which is, you know, just plots and then filling in the dialogue after the artist lays it out?
I do full script for when I'm doing it with other artists. And I thought I could do Marble Method for myself. Like public domain is the first thing I've written and drawn just by myself, besides like a Spider-Man issue in a long time. And so I'm like, oh, this will be easy. I'll just like just kind of jot down like what I want to have happen on a page, and I'll take care of the dialogue later. Like I'm in total control, and it screwed me over completely. Like I remember that first issue was so hard to like write after I'd drawn the art, and I'd have to redraw the art because it wasn't working. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I've got to write full script for myself too. Like I thought I'd be saving some time, and I was not at all.
So we've got some questions from patrons that we'd like to sprinkle in here and there. And so the first one is from Grant Baugh. Mm-hmm. And he asks, when you started with a project like Avengers Twilight, how does that get started? Does Marvel come to you with an idea, or do they come to you and say, do you have an idea?
That was a very specific project. So I'd worked with that editor, Tom Brevoort, who's like a legend at Marvel. I worked with him on Invaders and Marvel 2-in-1. And a couple of other small things. And I really liked working with them. And Spider-Man Life Story, that was kind of the big one, like, because that proved we could do these kind of six issue series, and have them do well. So I think that was in his head when he approached me for this. And basically he's wanted to do like kind of a, you know, dark future Avengers book for a long time. And he had a lot of notes, like he had ideas of his own. Normally when an editor has ideas of their own, like that's a sign to stay away from the project because it's like, oh God, like an editor that wants to be a writer, like you just stay away. But Tom's a different beast. Tom's the kind of guy, he's like, he's always thinking about the characters and he has good ideas, but also he's fine if you say no to those ideas. Like they're yours to work with, take what you want, and discard the rest. So he's very easy to work with in that regard. Have you ever had him on this?
We had Tom on a couple of years ago. Great guy. He's like an encyclopedia of knowledge. The many, you know, the decades he's been at Marvel.
I know he could never leave Marvel because like he's the guy who knows everything. He's got the keys to Marvel.
Right.
I shudder to think of a Marvel without Tom Brevoort. So yeah, he approached me with kind of like some ideas, in some cases just like a line, like I feel like it would be nice to in all this have a scene with this character saying something like this. I'm like, oh okay, that's interesting. So I kind of took that and I went away and then I kind of wrote what I thought it should be. And Tom's really good at that back and forth, so we did a lot of back and forth, and yeah, just kind of hit the ground running. And once we got Danny on board, Daniel Acuna, like, oh my God, like that guy can draw, he can paint, like he makes those worlds feel very distinct and lived in. And that's so much of the work, especially when you're doing like a future story, because you're not just asking them to draw Marvel characters, you're asking them to redesign every Marvel character and redesign the city, redesign the environments. Like almost everything in that book is something new, you know?
Besides, which has got to be like, fun for him.
It's fun, but it's a lot of work. Like that's why it took a long time for the book to come out, because like I signed up for this in 2019, and like I think my first script was in 2020, pre-pandemic, and like the world has changed a lot since then. So it's interesting for me to see the book coming out, because there are things that are in the book and things that are coming up in the book that are like things that happened in real life that like are going to make me look like a hack. Like, oh, he just like copied the news. But I'm like, no, I wrote this before the news. Like, it's very strange for me to see it coming out now with fresh eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. I meant to ask you about that, because I did hear that this all started in 2019 pre-pandemic. Yeah. And like for listeners right now, like when this comes out, issue 4 of the 6-issue miniseries will be out. So we still don't know how it ends, but that's okay. You'll tell us.
Yeah.
So, let me ask you this. You decided to write this Avengers story that takes place, and from what I can gather, maybe like 25, 30 years in the future.
Yeah. My mind is around 30. Yeah.
And so you could have chosen any character to focus on, or you could have just focused on a team.
Yeah.
But you chose Steve Rogers. Was that you or was that Tom?
I think it was both of us. I think we never even had to have the discussion over who was going to be the central character there. It's an Avengers book, And it's a future where America is having trouble. Like, so Captain America just makes the most sense. Steve Rogers is the guy, right? And yeah, you kind of want that, you know, that guy to root for. That's like, you know, him as a strong character, and he's the moral center of, you know, of the Marvel universe. And he's down and out. And like, how'd that happen? How does he come back from that? You know, it made a ton of sense to both of us.
Now, I didn't know what to expect before reading the first issue, but when I did, wow. I immediately got like a Dark Knight Returns vibe. Yeah. And then when I mentioned this to another Cap fan, they said they got a Kingdom Come vibe.
Yeah.
And which I tend to agree now.
And I heard from a guy at a convention that he got like an old man Logan
vibe. Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, there are so many. I mean, that was also part of the fun, which is there's so many different types of future
dystopian
stories. Dystopia slash utopia, like that you can kind of pick from. And it's funny, one of the one of the fan emails I got was from Mark Waid, and he was like, hey, you know, I just read it and I think it's like the best thing you've done, blah blah blah. And I was like, of course you think it's the best thing I've done, I just ripped you off. Like, I don't know if he knew, I don't know if he consciously understood that.
I love your work.
yeah, I'm copying you.
And I actually do have a Mark Waid question, because we'll get to that a little bit later. But did you have any favorite dystopian type stories that inspired you for Twilight?
I mean, yeah, Kingdom Come is definitely one. Yeah, old man Logan, like, because there's definitely stuff there with the when they reference H Day. And like the villains finding out the identities, like that very much is similar to what Mark Miller did in terms of like what kind of brought down the world of the old man Logan kind of wastelands. So there was that. Yeah, Kingdom Come, Dark Knight Returns, obviously, like Future Imperfect one is one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, it's great. Peter David, yeah.
Yeah, that's prime Peter David. Yeah, it's hard to not have them in your head when you're writing something like this. Like, if anything, I had to kind of check myself to make sure I wasn't like hewing too close to any one of those, because that's just the instinct, because there is a template for it, right? Like, bad future, things suck, the hero rises. Like, that's just kind of what happens in almost all of those, right? So yeah, there's bound to be similarities. But yeah, it's there's a reason there's so many of those books, and the reason they usually work. Well, part of that is the freedom, because I'm not dictated to by continuity on a book like this. I can kind of like come up with what I want to do, to the point where like Tom had to remind me a few times. He's like, you know, you can kind of mess these characters up even more. Like, it's not like there's an issue 7. Like, you can do what you can go a bit more extreme here. And it's hard after working for Marvel and DC for a long time, because you're so used to making sure the characters, you know, get hurt, but not too hurt, you know, like, cause they're all being reset. Whereas here it's like, oh yeah, no, we can really kind of mess things up a bit more.
So, you know, one of the most interesting things, at least to me, about the series is that you've taken these established characters, Luke Cage, Kamala Khan, yeah, Steve Rogers, and you've given us older, mature, in some cases, tired, and maybe more cynical versions of the heroes we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
So it's almost axiomatic in society that the older you get, the less idealistic we become, and more, if not accepting, but maybe a little more ambivalent about the injustices we see around us, especially those that don't directly touch us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get a sense that you're challenging that narrative a bit in Avengers Twilight, in affirming that maybe it's never too late to be a hero, or at least remain a bit idealistic.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that Steve Rogers has gone through a thing, and there was a point in his life where he was like, you know, I have the, you know, the poster in the background, you know, vote for Cap kind of thing, Senator Rogers. Like, he clearly put himself out there and then got shot down. And yeah, that creates the cynicism. You know, having that happen kind of time and time again. And like in that first issue, I have like Luke Cage and Matt Murdock, and they seem to be the ones that are a bit more kind of eager to like maybe help out. But even they're cynical. Like Matt's a bit more surly than he usually is, and Luke's a bit more cranky, because that's another kind of element of getting older. Even if you do want to help, you're just like, yeah, these people don't want it, but we gotta do something, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It had to be done before 9, but yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But Steve's
more pee breaks.
Yeah, Steve's a great character to kind of play around with in that regard, because he's seen so much, right? And yeah, if anyone deserves a break, it's him. And what that was one of the important things about the setting of the world, like it wasn't going to be an apocalyptic wasteland; it was going to be a good place. But people are content. Like you see, like especially the street scenes that Danny painted, like you know, they're bright and they're colorful, and people are just strolling around, going for coffee, and you know, that's to me, that's almost more dangerous than the apocalyptic wasteland, you know, because when you're well fed, it's easier for you to ignore the dark side of that. Like, oh, you're well fed. Well, where'd that food come from? Like, who prepared it? Who, like, you know, who's suffering to kind of get you your mocha latte or whatever?
So let's talk about that theme. You know, we see Steve being disrespected often in the story, at least early issues, being referred to as an old man who lives in the past, and he's corny. In one example, a military officer refers to him as, quote, his head is full of bleeping delusions and cotton candy dreams of what he thinks the world should be, what the flag he wears should represent, and that makes him dangerous. And then later, James Stark says the same thing to Steve. He says, your dreams are a little too dangerous. Is that a theme for your story, that we need to be on guard of those who would silence our thoughts and our dreams?
Like to have ideals, I think, is a positive thing, right? And to wish the best of humanity, which is Steve Rogers, right? Like, he believes in the American dream. He believes in, like, helping your fellow human that's fallen down, and you know, the powers that be don't necessarily have that, right? Or you know, they're willing to do like kind of darker, more dangerous things overseas or at home to keep kind of to keep everyone safe, and like but they're willing to murder whoever to kind of make that happen. So Steve feels, sure, there's some cheesy elements, but that's why we love the character, and that's like, and that should be the heart of everyone. Just like have some sort of idealism, with action. Like idealism without action is nothing. That's a cotton candy dream. Idealism with action is world changing, right? And I say that a lot to my friends, because a lot of my friends get like, you know, hung up on the news, and they get really upset about the news. I'm just like, okay, like, what are you doing? Like, what are your actions? Like, you can have a higher ideal, and you can complain about, you know, the state of things, but to complain and to, you know, have these quote unquote ideals without action, is almost worse than not having those ideals. Cause it's like, wow, you're really feeling that way, and you're not doing anything. That's interesting.
Well, I do think, and I can't wait to see how the story ends, but I do think, you know, it's all about being inspired. But, you know, it's funny, over the decades, Steve Rogers has been known for his speeches for inspiring people. And there's a point in issue 2 where he gives a speech and it falls on deaf ears.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in fact, it may even backfire.
Yeah.
Why was it important to demonstrate in this story that Steve's time as being inspirational may have passed?
I mean, that was a heartbreaking one to write, because you know, you want to write the speech where Cap gives the speech and everyone's like, yeah, and they all believe. But you know, that scene was kind of, again, you know, 2019, but very relevant right now. Like, it's reflective of a time when people just don't believe in what they're seeing, and they don't want to know the truth necessarily about what's happening. So it was important to have like Steve Rogers like say this thing, but like everyone's been kind of fed lies throughout the years preceding our story, and it's very obvious, you know, they won't let people record, or like, you know, the civil liberties are being trounced. And I always worry I'm gonna venture into weird conspiracy stuff, but in the story, the media is being controlled, and they're presenting a version of a world that doesn't actually exist. So when this relic basically tries to tell them the things that they believe are wrong, no one ever buys that. That's a hard thing for someone to hear. If I tell my parents that the things they're sharing on Facebook aren't true, they're not going to necessarily go, oh, you're right. Okay. Well, yeah, let me rethink that. They're going to dig in. People just dig in.
Yeah. Cause it gets in their ego. It gets to their, their own self-worth, right? It's easier to fool people than to convince them they've been fooled.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very hard to reverse it. Very hard. Especially when your identity gets caught up in it. And that's what you kind of see in this world. He also attempted to do it at a party. When people are happy, when they're, they're out and engaged, and he destroyed that night and then told them they're all fools.
Right.
it's a bad plan, Steve. Sorry.
Now you mentioned before about Luke and Matt being a little bit more idealistic. Now you wrote the character Daredevil for 4 or so years, and as I mentioned before, he's my second favorite character, and I absolutely loved your runs. We see him briefly in the first issue of Avengers Twilight, and then he's gone. Now, I'm not going to give anything away, but was that difficult to not continue Matt's story in Twilight, or at this point, was it just time for you to move on?
No, I mean, he kind of, not to say he served a purpose, but the beats I needed in the story, he served those beats. And I think anything beyond that, I didn't need him to put on the tights. You don't necessarily need a book where everyone just suits up again. Because in a lot of ways, Matt Murdock does more good legally fighting for rights than going out and beating people up. Don't tell him I said that, but he should probably really, really focus on his legal career. Especially at that age, right? He might lose a step in terms of swinging around skyscrapers and water towers, but his mind is still sharp, and legally he can still hold his own, which kind of makes him a bit more cynical.
Speaking of old and cynical, some of our listeners are old school. they stopped reading new comics a long time ago. Some of them.
Yes.
What do you say to those Cap fans to get them to try out Avengers Twilight?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I'm a bad salesperson. It's fun. It's pretty. I don't know. I mean, if you've fallen out of love with comics or with the character,
they live in the past.
Sure.
Nothing was good after 1979. Talking about.
Yeah. No, it was. I've encountered some people like that in my day. I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that it's self-contained. You can read the story, you can understand what's happening, you know the characters, and you got 6 issues that are beautifully painted, and that's the commitment, right? Ongoing comics are very hard to kind of get in to, I find. They're hard to write in a lot of ways, because of all the continuity. So I like projects like this where you can just hey, here's issue 1. You don't need to know anything going in. It'll be explained. And we're kind of cutting to the heart of what heroism means in this world, hopefully. But really, it's just the art. It's beautiful. I've been very blessed with the pairings I've had on so many projects. And Daniel Acuna is at the top of the list.
So continuing on the Cap theme, I want to dive in a bit on your Invaders series.
Mentioned
at the top of the show, came out 2019 or 2020, 12-issue series. And I love this series.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, it was really good.
Thank you.
Really, really. And I read it through last night and I'm to refresh myself and I'm really struck. So you've got, of course, the Invaders characters. You got Namor and you've got Steve and Jim Hammond, the Human Torch. Yeah. Bucky's in there, Jacqueline Falsworth, Spitfire. Yeah. And they all wrestle with these memories of their time in World War II. Mm-hmm. Good and bad memories. And all of them experience trauma. And that sense of that trauma informs their sense of self in different ways. And particularly their approach to problem solving in contemporary times. And for some of them, it's an extreme psychological burden. And I don't want to give away too much because for folks who haven't read it, I want them to get out there and to read the series or go back and reread it. But you seem to have something to say about memories, and especially the memories we carry about traumatic experiences. Can I ask you to share a bit about what the genesis was for the story and that emphasis that I think you are sort of drilling down on with regard to memory and trauma?
Yeah, I mean, when you're offered Invaders, there's going to be war. Like it's hard to do an Invader series without kind of referencing the war. I'm a big Namor fan. And I think one of the first things I just thought was just like, you know, there've been explanations over the years about Namor's personality shifts, but war kind of gets overlooked a little bit when we talk about that stuff. Like John Byrne had his thing in like the late 80s or whatever, where it was like, oh, it's oxygen deprivation from coming back and forth like between water and air. That's why he's kind of a dick now and then. and I kind of wanted to do something about like, yeah, like the bonding, the formative experience in war, and the trauma that you carry. But it's also, I want to make sure it was a comic book, right? Because I think you can tell a PTSD story and make it very true to form. But we're still telling a comic, so like what's that added kind of superhero level to it? And so not to spoil too much stuff, but you know, that's why I brought in Charles Xavier and did some shenanigans with Namor's mind, just to kind of couch the PTSD memory stuff a bit more with some Marvel lightness in a way. And it was just kind of a fun opportunity to kind of play with the histories of the characters as well. I was just going to say, and I especially enjoyed bouncing between the two time periods because we were able to utilize two art teams for that, made it a lot easier because we were able to put out 12 issues with the same artist. Like Carlos Magno did the present day stuff and Butch Geist did the past stuff.
Very reminiscent look, you know, to his time on the Brubaker run.
Yeah. He's I give a lot of notes to artists. I think mostly just because I draw and I get really specific about what I want, and Butch, maybe I sent him one note in all 12 issues. Like he just nailed it every time. Like he understands storytelling and expression and use of space. Like, yeah, he's a master.
Yeah. I do want to point out, I mean, for fellow fans of Namor, your characterization, I mean, providing a lot of that filling in the background of what was happening during those amnesiac spells, and just the relationships that he formed and the impacts of those relationships on him personally is not something we see a lot in stories about Namor. And so that was a really rich characterization. I love that about it.
Thanks. Thank you for that. I just want to add that I'm also good when Namor is just a jerk. Like, I think there's room for both. Yeah. I know it's a tricky thing about these characters is like as you go along, like if they've existed for so long, every character gets reformed somewhat and explained more and moves their way towards the light as a result of it, because a character arc is an arc, right? Like you've got to learn and grow, and but because it's comics, you can't fully, like there's always going to be the reset. I think after Invaders, like they kind of brought him back. Jason Aaron did an Avengers run where Namor's, you know, all in black and he's a bit of a bad boy again. I'm just like, it's great. Like, you kind of have to do that, or else everyone's going to run around being Steve Rogers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they'll all have learned their lessons. They'll all be like stoic characters, and no one will be angry at each other ever again. So I never mind the resets, but I also still like the ones that do the deep dives.
So you know, another really central character is Bucky, right? And of course, we love Bucky because we're Captain America comic book fans, and Bucky's a key part of that mythos. And of course, I love Bucky, World War II Bucky and Winter Soldier Bucky. And this series features both Buckys because it goes back and forth in time. And one of the things I really loved about the story was how Bucky is used on a number of occasions as sort of the one doing the work, right? Steve's out there providing that obvious distraction, bringing the attention to him so Bucky can sneak in there, or the Winter Soldier can sneak in there, snoop around, get the intel.
Yeah,
you know, and it's sort of the opposite of what happened in an actual, the Golden Age World War II stories, where Bucky was always in trouble and Steve was always having to bail him out.
Yeah.
Right. And so, of course, Brubaker's run, you know, radically changed that and painted Bucky as somebody who was a very serious, deadly professional. Yeah. So how do you see that relationship, sort of that partnership between Bucky and Steve?
In terms of modern day, it's tricky. Like, I love Brubaker's run, but Winter Soldier as a character is a very hard one to figure out what to do with now, because that was the story. The story was Bucky coming back and regaining memories and learning to trust again. And then after that, it's like, okay, well, what do you do with him? Like, is he just always going to be the bad boy that you send on the missions that, like, you know, are in the shadows a bit? It's hard to get a grasp on him, I think, for a lot of writers as a result of that. Because how do you grow that character? Do you grow that character? Or does he work best as a guest star to come in and kind of like solve the problems? Yeah, because like, you can't have him and Steve be on the outs. You can't have them just being like partners again, because that doesn't work. So he becomes a bit of an anomaly, I think, now in relation to Steve Rogers.
I also wanted to ask you, there's a comment that the Human Torch, Jim Hammond, makes to Steve in issue one. And he says, "The war ended for me and it ended for you. You fight a different war now under your own rules." And I felt like that could be interpreted on two different levels. You know, Cap is a free agent now. Yeah, he works for the Avengers every now and again. Sometimes he leads the Avengers, but he's not a super soldier working for the US Army anymore.
Yeah.
And later on, when Steve and Namor are trapped on an island together, a little bit toward the end of the series, and Steve is, he talks about the decisions that both of them were forced to make during World War II and the people they lost as a result. And I don't know how familiar you are with the Golden Age Cap stories, but it was a very, very different character than the Cap that we're used to seeing in modern comics, at least since the 1960s. And I was wondering, was there an effort there to bridge that? Because sometimes we talk about, you know, the Cap in World War II in the Golden Age books was very different than the Cap that we see now. And how do we reconcile those two? And these two lines almost help reconcile that, at least for the readers.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of that. It was less specific about like comic book versions from the 60s, but more in line with what we anticipate World War II would have been for those characters as like young men and women kind of thrown into war and the decisions they had to make, and Cap holding a gun at several points. Like, it's not a thing you see now. It's war. Like, nobody leaves war unscathed, and nobody leaves war necessarily proud of all their actions, and I think that applies to everyone on the Invaders as well. So I'm not never really trying to reconcile old comics and new comics, because in my mind they're different universes, really. Like, you can't transpose that dialogue and those situations onto the modern characters. Definitely not kind of a one-to-one thing. You can allude to them. You use continuity where it helps, right? Like, if there's a character introduced or a situation that works for your story, then okay, pluck that, update it a bit so it doesn't feel too old-fashioned, and utilize it that way. But yeah, obviously I'm familiar with all the Golden Age stuff, but yeah, it wasn't too much of a conscious choice to kind of hit that period more than just a general, you know, horrors of war kind of thing. And how you deal with it, and how you come out of it, and what kind of a person you can become on the other end of it. And I remember, it's funny talking about Invaders, because I haven't thought about it in a while. It's on my shelf, but I never read my own books.
You should read it. It's really good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Well, I don't know about that. At least the art's good.
The art's good. The art's good. But you mentioning the island issue, I'm like, oh yeah, man, the island issue. Like, I was in my plot for the whole series. Like, I was really focused on getting to that island issue because I knew that was going to be the stuff that I really love to do, which is like that one on one between Steve and Namor. Yeah, that was very satisfying to write.
All right, so we have one other question from a patron, and he, Joshua Van Dyne, he asks, having written extensive runs on Daredevil and Batman, would you ever consider writing a run for the main Captain America title if given the opportunity? So, and I think, you know, where his point is coming from is you've written Cap in stories like The Invaders and Devil's Reign, but now you have a taste of him as a lead character. Would you like to do it again?
I mean, it's
a loaded question.
I mean, it's always a tricky one because there's someone writing Cap. And so as soon as I state like, oh, I want to write Captain America, it's like someone going to your job and going like, I want your job. I want your job next. Like that always feels like a bit of a dick move, you know? I will say, like, in the past, I've had discussions with Marvel about writing the Cap series, and the timing never worked out, or the ideas didn't quite work out. But I love that character, and like, maybe more than it is healthy for a Canadian, but yeah. And in almost every case when it comes to the characters at these companies, I don't think about it too much until it's offered to me. And when it's offered to me, I go and I try to come up with the best idea I can. And if I don't have it, I don't do it. Like, that's always been my kind of rule. Like, even on Daredevil, like, when C.B. Sobolski became editor in chief, he sent out an email to all the contract writers and he's like, let me know your top three titles just so I know when they come available, whether or not to consider you. I'm pretty sure he got almost every email back said Daredevil. Mine certainly did. And then when he offered it to me, I said, okay, I'll get back to you in 2 weeks. Which I think confused him because he's like, you asked for this job. I'm like, yes, but I need to now go and I have to think about it. Because if I don't have something worthwhile, then I'm not going to do it. And so the same goes for Cap. Like, if they offered it to me and I had the time, I would go away and I would probably do a thorough reread and see if there's anything that I have that feels new or different or worth dedicating my time to and worth the reader's time. Like, that's the big thing too. I think a lot of people just say yes to writing a book because it's like, oh, that's my childhood dream. I'll write Green Arrow or Green Lantern or Green whoever. But then they don't have the story or the story they have just doesn't live up to the title, which is, you know, and I get it. And also it's work. Like, people need a job. Like, someone offers you a job and you need work, you take it.
Right.
I'm fortunate enough that my independent stuff has done well enough that I can be a bit choosier with the kind of projects I take.
Yeah,
that's a very long answer to basically say, like, if they offer me Cap, I would think about it and I might take it or I might not.
That's a fair answer. And we definitely put you on the spot being on a Captain America show. So and I want to get to your independent work real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
But one last thing, because I did say I wanted to circle back to Mark Waid, because we did have him on the show and he had some amazing runs on the series. He's an amazing writer altogether. And we asked him if he had ever come back to like a fifth run of Captain America. And
has
he said
been four. Has he done four?
If you include the miniseries Man Out of Time.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And he gave a very, Bob, what would you say? A stern answer of hell no.
Yeah, it was unequivocal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
And he said today's times are too political, that he felt like he couldn't touch Captain America because he thinks there's always something somewhat political about the character that
for sure.
In today's times, you know, whatever story you write, half the people aren't going to like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is part of the trick. Yeah, maybe by the end of Avengers Twilight, people will be mad. I don't know, but like, yeah, I mean, it depends on the tone of the comic. Like when I was a kid, I was reading Mark Gruenwald Cap, and there's a lot of politics in there, but there are also things that went over my head, or they're just like, gags for him that weren't necessarily for the youngsters. He literally made Ronald Reagan a snake. He
Yes.
literally made him a snake. Like his politics were very clear in that moment.
Yes.
And in fact, that whole issue, I remember rereading it. I was just like, where he's like, not portrayed as incompetent. He's only got a couple lines in there, but there's definitely like, he co keeps calling her
Well, I think he
Nancy
does.
Mother.
Yeah, mommy.
Mommy.
Because
Yeah,
I see you
yeah.
have a lot of original art on the wall behind you, and
Yeah.
I actually, for a period of time, I did own the Kieran Dwyer page of Cap versus, or the Captain versus a reptilian Ronald Reagan.
It's so good. It's so good. I love those issues so much. One of the fascinating things I discovered, and this is again, this is years ago when I was considering doing some more Cap work. I did a reread of the period that I love, as is usually the case, the stuff that you get into when you're younger. So the Gruenwald period. Rereading those issues, like it's such a great solid story, and there's some really shocking moments in it, like when John Walker like snaps and kills all those people in the barn. Like it's like, holy, I can't believe they did this, and they made it silent. Like it's pretty peak comic storytelling for that time. Oh, those letter pages. Oh, those letters pages. They hated it. Every single letter hated it. Like it's wild, like how vitriolic that all got. And the editors and also I was like, well, at least you're still reading, keep on reading, like, because they know how it's going to end. You know how they're going to put on the costume again. And I always think about that, and I always talk to other creators about that, especially when a creator finds themselves in the middle of like a storm online or whatever, people upset about their story. I'm just like, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. In 30 years, that thing you just wrote, that's going to be a TV show. It's going to be the thing that people love and, that think is like one of the best runs of the character. Like for the most part, that's usually what happens. Like,
It's funny as when we had Tom on the show, he talked exactly about that as that it's a roller coaster, right? And like you have people who currently hate this thing, but you give it enough time, and whether it's nostalgia or sentimentality or just looking at it from a second time with a new lens, all of a sudden it's like that was a really great story.
Well, it's also just not having the ending, right? Like it'd be like getting halfway through a novel and being like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening to this character. I'm putting this novel down. Like, well, you've still got more of the novel to go. Like, it'll probably wrap up. But when you're reading it, you're in the moment, you're just like, I can't believe it. Like, there's only one Captain America, Steve Rogers. Like, what are they doing? And like, this guy, this brute, look at him. He's a monster. What are you doing? And it's like, yeah, unless you have like the story sense to recognize, like, and step outside it to be like, oh, like they're creating these feelings because they want to remind you that Steve Rogers is the best Captain America. Like, that's even as a kid, that seemed obvious to me, but it wasn't obvious to a lot of the readers. And I find that really, really fascinating. And that's why I stay offline because, like, especially Twitter is like letters pages times a thousand because
Oof.
they're picking apart every issue, like really quickly, really in depth, really just like blowing it all and trying to find like ways to attack you that don't even have to do with the story. They just know like they don't like what's happening to the character, so they got to figure out another way to kind of attack you that isn't just that I don't care what you did with the character. Like it's pretty vicious and pretty bad, and I tell all my friends just stay off of it and like do the work. If you believe in the work and you know the story and you know the ending of the story and you know where the characters are going to go, and it's going to be satisfying for everyone involved, just keep your head down and do the job. Yeah,
Well,
it's pretty.
speaking of keeping your head down and doing the job, let's talk about sex criminals.
Jesus Christ! Again, family friendly podcast.
No, you just celebrated 10-year anniversary, and
Oh yeah.
wow, and there's a big collection that just came out.
Oh, there is. I'm lifting it right now, and it's so heavy. I was at Seattle for Emerald City Comic Con this weekend, and my wife sent me a photo of a ton of boxes on her porch, basically being like, what the hell is all this? And I'm like, that is at least 6-7 years of work.
So, I can't tell you how many times Bob's wife said the same thing with packages on his porch.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. And it wasn't, unfortunately, 6 or 7 years work. It was
six or seven years days of pay. Yeah. So 10th anniversary of Sex Criminals, the book I did with Matt Fraction. And we finally put out a proper complete edition, a big soft cover, 720 pages. Yeah, it's a weird feeling. It's a weird feeling to see all the work in one place like this. Big heavy tome.
Yeah, the amount of your life that has been poured into that in blood, sweat, and tears, and time, and everything.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where, like, I've written a lot of books, but I'll forget them. Like, even when we're talking about Invaders, like, you're kind of reminding me of it. Like, oh yeah, of course, that issue, and oh yeah, that bit of dialogue with something like Sex Criminals, because it's a thing that we fully created. That didn't exist before we got on it, and the fact that I drew it and colored it and lettered it, like, I remember where I was at with almost every page of this thing. Like, wow. I remember the feelings, I remember, you know, what was happening kind of in my life and around us, my feelings towards Matt, his feelings towards me. Like, it's a weird thing to produce a book that's just two people for that amount of time.
So for those who aren't familiar with the with the plot of the story, you know, how would you, I know you said you're not a salesman, and it's kind of hard for you to do. And,
but, you know, I'll keep it family friendly. So here goes. It's about a couple who they meet, and when they make love, time stops, like literally stops. And so they do what any a sane person would do, and they start to rob banks. So they are sex criminals. I wish Matt picked a different title, because when you Google my name, it has sex criminals right after it. But
there are certain towns you're not allowed in.
Yeah, it is what it is. Yeah, and that's the dumb concept that made me go, yeah, let's do this book. But it ended up being kind of a book about kind of mental health and relationships and sexual histories and all sorts of kind of big grand life stuff. And it changed my life, so I've got a real affinity for it.
Yeah, and
I'll never do anything that's as good as it. That's the other weird thing. Like, it's kind of weird to know, like, no matter what I do in comics, like, this is the thing. Like, this is the thing that I'll be remembered for, and this is the thing that, like, would hopefully be kind of top of my obituary.
And or at least your Google, like, page. Yeah.
Or at least my Google page. And it's like the first thing, you know, really, that I did fully. But I'm happy with that. I mean, like, yeah, to have this in my life has been such a treat.
And it's available now. It's on the stands now for people to check out, right?
Yeah, yeah. March 27th, I think, is when it comes out. Hits the bookstores. Check it out. Learn about sex from a Canadian.
And besides,
there's the marketing tagline right there.
There you go.
Learn about sex from a Canadian. I love it. I'm in.
And besides Batman and public domain, what else is keeping you busy in 2024?
A lot of stuff I can't talk about. I've got a few new series coming out through a non-Marvel DC publisher. There's the sequel to The White Trees. Was kind of a fantasy book I did a few years ago at Image. And we've got the sequel called The Whisper Queen coming out in May, drawn by Chris Anka, who was my partner on Star-Lord and who is the character designer of Spider-Verse, which is why he's been so busy these past few years.
Wow.
He's been working on the movies. So it's gorgeous. Like, it's going to be so satisfying to see those come out again. But yeah, that's about it. Writing Batman is like a full-time job, because there's like an ungodly amount of issues that come out a year of that title. Mm-hmm. It's got to be like 18 to 20. And you kind of have to, like, be involved in a lot of bigger meetings than you would if you're doing Howard the Duck.
Yeah, speaking of continuity, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's like a full-time job, and I'm writing and drawing public domain, which is like a second full-time job. So yeah, that's about it for now.
Nah, sounds like enough.
It's enough.
If fans want to keep up to date on what's going on with in your world, what's the best way for them to do that?
Just give me a call at 416-4th. No. sign up for my newsletter, zdarsky.substack.com. I put out one a week, sometimes two a week, and I've been told that it's everyone's favorite newsletter.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. I actually have signed up for it myself.
Nice. Very good.
I got the nice little form mail saying I'm a cheap bastard for going to figure out.
Oh, you're the one.
Yeah.
There's one person that didn't pay.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's totally worth it to stay up and up to date and always hear your clever quips too. Appreciate those. Highly recommend everybody, if you haven't picked up Avengers Twilight, make sure you do. In the next couple of months, there'll probably be a solicitation for a collected edition. Go to your local comic shop, make sure that you sign up for that, because it's right up there right now. I mean, I'm only halfway Thanks. Through, but it's up there with Kingdom Come and those types of stories.
Oh, cool.
And then also check out Sex Criminals. This complete compendium. Oh my goodness. He's showing the book right now, and it has to, I'm looking at it. It has to weigh 6 pounds.
It's a big boy.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, Chip, thanks so much for joining the show. It's been an absolute pleasure wrapping cap with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, Bob, I got to tell you, I had a lot of fun wrapping cap with Chip. He's a very entertaining guy.
He is. He's got a great sense of humor, but he's also thoughtful, insightful, and also obviously supremely talented.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be able to be a writer, be an artist, heck, he's even done coloring and lettering. He's the full package, as my wife would say.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't Google his name in the library.
That's true. That's true. you might want to clean out your cache after you do that. But no, he brought up some really good points about the importance of Cap as a role model, as somebody who is inspirational. Listen, he didn't say no. He didn't say no about writing Cap someday.
You know, he didn't. And he left that door open. And I think, I love what's going on right now with the series with JMS, but all good things can't last forever.
But he could do another miniseries, right? I mean, JMS could continue with the regular series.
That's true.
Get Chip on another miniseries, right?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And I would not mind at all. I'm a big fan of those one shots and miniseries. So if we could get another one of those out there, Tom, talking to you, let's get that done.
You know what he recently did for the he's a regular writer for Batman. He recently did a Joker Year One story arc within mm-hmm. Batman.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be cool to see like a Red Skull or a Baron Zemo or some other villain Year One story?
It's I can't imagine how difficult it is, to take an established character with decades of history and try to come up with something new. But Chip's the sort of guy who can make magic like that happen, like he's doing with Avengers Twilight. So I and like he's done before with Spider-Man. So I would love to see him take on one of the core villains and to do a Year One type project with one of them. I think he's the guy who's got the talent set to do that.
Yeah. I would too. I would, and anything Chip writes, I love. I loved his stuff on Daredevil. I loved, some of his independent work. I haven't read it all, but I have read some, and what I have read, I do enjoy. And I haven't read all of Sex Criminals, but I have read some early stuff, and it is pretty cool. So I may check that out too.
Well, I might read a little bit of that tonight. I like to read a little bit before I go to bed at night, I'll pull that up. I hope it doesn't get me in trouble, but we'll see what happens.
You know what won't get you in trouble, Bob, is next episode we're going to come back The Streets of Poison, Part 4, and that's going to be in Captain America 375. So we're going to be covering this issue that has, here it is, Captain America and Daredevil fighting. Dun, dun, dun.
What?
I know. Mm-hmm. And those who have been reading this story realize it's not just a typical Marvel comic book. The two heroes went ahead and, you know, there's a misunderstanding and they fight it. No, we understand that Cap is under the influence of ice. And so he's not his normal thinking self. So he's going to be going at Daredevil full strength. And so looking forward to covering that. That's going to be Captain America 375. And by the way, if you haven't done the first three parts of Streets of Poison, check them out on our podcast. Episodes 170, 175, and 179. As we cover that, the second Wednesday of every month, we cover a new part to Streets of Poison. All right, Bob. Well, looking forward to next episode. And as always, it's been fun wrapping Cap with you.
It has. It has. Another great interview in the works. And I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. All right. Well, he's Bob Lucius. I'm Rick Verbanis. And you have been listening to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.
Oh, I've got one for you, Rick. You ready?
Yeah.
Maybe you've heard this one before.
All right. Oh, it's in your notebook.
My son's been asking for
jokes.
This book, so.
Jokes for to tell at your class.
Yeah. Hold on.
All right.
I asked my girlfriend to meet me at the gym, but she never showed up. I guess we're not going to work out.
I like that. I like that.
That's a good one, right?
Yeah. I might save that for the next time I go to the gym.
You should, right?
You know, it's funny. I was at the gym last week, and I stayed around after class to do some stretching because, you know, my back had been bothering me. And then when I showed up there, it was just the woman who was who works the counter, and lovely lady, and the instructor. And he told a joke, and I was like, "Are you sure you're not a dad?" And he's like, "I'm a dad." And I was like, "Oh, really?" He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "I have two kids." I was like, "Oh, how old are they?" And they were like 14 and 18 or something like that. And I was like, "Oh, wow. Wouldn't have guessed." And I was like, "Oh, well, you know, kudos to you for your dad jokes." And then I was like, "You know, I got this calendar, this daily bad dad joke calendar." And they're like, "Oh yeah, you got any good ones?" I'm like, "No, they're all bad." I was like, "Oh, but I do have a good one." I said, "You know, I wrote a song about a fajita." It was more of a rap.
Did you like that one?
They loved that one.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, I followed it up with I was going to get my pony to sing it. He's a little hoarse.
Oh, they're precious, aren't they?
Are they? Precious.